a Birdificer creation.
Welcome to episode 147 of the Let's Talk Apple podcast. I'm your host, Bart Buchholz, and this is the show for November 2025. It's a rather strange month's worth of Apple news, presumably because Apple wanted to have all of their ducks in a row before the holiday season kicks off at the end of November. But really, while I have chosen four stories to refer to as the main stories, in many months, each of these four stories would have appeared somewhere else in the show notes, although maybe I gave them a little bit more meat on the bones this time after I promoted them. But really, it's on the whole a rather quiet month. But nonetheless, we have interesting things to talk about, so let's get going. As usual, let's start with some follow-up on stories we talked about last month. When last we left the story of what had been the Apple TV Plus subscription service being rebranded Apple TV, just in case we weren't already confused enough between the Apple TV app and the Apple TV hardware box, well, now we have the Apple TV subscription to run in the Apple TV app on the Apple TV subscription box, or hardware box. Anyway, when we last discussed the topic, Apple had picked the new name, which everyone thought was silly, or not everyone, but most people thought was silly. I still think it is. And they had updated the logo for the Apple TV app, not the Apple TV subscription, to make it rainbow-coloured. Very subtly, sort of a pastel rainbow. But, you know, just a little splash of colour. And that was it, really. Well, we now have a new signature sound, as Apple are calling it, the equivalent of the Netflix to-dum that runs before all the Netflix own self-made stuff. And this will appear in front of Apple TV Originals, so content Apple make themselves. And sort of the most interesting thing about it is that it was composed by Phineas, the brother of Billie Eilish, and musical talent very much in his own right. So that's kind of interesting. The signature sound is accompanied by what looks like a really cool piece of animation work of the Apple TV logo made out of glass that sort of does a cool spinny flippy effect. And it turns out Apple did it in hardware. It is a practical effect. And when you see one of the recently released Apple TV originals with the new sound and logo, it's kind of cool, actually, and so the fact that it's actual glass that's being shot in an actual studio is kind of impressive. And then a related piece of rebranding is that Apple One, which obviously includes Apple TV, has also gotten a new logo, which is basically the Apple logo sliced into layers to give you the impression that it is, in fact, multiple Apple things stacked together to make one Apple whole. I really like the logo, but I've heard a lot of people say mean things about it. You can make up your own mind. It doesn't really affect whether or not I will remain an Apple One subscriber. I am and I will, whether or not they change the logo. Anyway, there we are. We also talked last month about the collapse of what I thought was a very silly class action lawsuit against Apple and Amazon, accusing them of price fixing, because basically they cracked down on counterfeits on the Amazon store, which were extremely hostile to users. But obviously people who want to do knockoff Apple stuff don't like that. Anyway, there was a class action suit. The thing literally fell apart. The judge excoriated the legal company who failed to tell the judge that their plaintiff had rather evaporated, which is kind of important for a lawsuit. The judge was extremely cranky and tossed the case. Well, Apple and Amazon are hoping to have the last laugh. They have now filed the paperwork to demand they be repaid for their expenses in terms of this obviously dumb class action suit that fell apart, so they would like $2 million to compensate them for having to defend this silly case. We shall see how that all pans out. We also got a bunch of announcements last month about renewables initiatives in the EU and China. Well, Apple continued, but they went quite a lot further south. all the way to the Antipodes, at least from Ireland's point of view. And we have new similar projects in Australia and New Zealand added to the list of things Apple will be doing. And then finally, we're going to pay one very, very, very short visit into Trumplandia here, mainly for me to unpraise Tim Cook. So I had said that while I do not like the fact that he has been doing a lot of pandering to President Trump, at least he had the spine to stand up to the president when he went on his little foreign junket to Saudi Arabia to go meet with the literally murderous crown prince. And Trump raked Apple over the coals because Tim Cook had a spine. And I really praised Tim for that. Well, I take it back. I guess he genuinely did have a diary conflict last time, because this time, when President Trump invited the literally murderous Crown Prince to visit the White House, where he was feted rather than arrested, he only murdered a journalist working for an American newspaper. I mean, why should that stop him being welcomed into the White House? Sorry, I find it very hard to be anything but unbelievably critical about fating this murderous man, but here we are. And Tim Cook decided to join them all for dinner. He wasn't alone. Just about every other tech leader dirtied themselves in the same way. But there we have it. I take back my small little bit of praise for Tim Cook's backbone. It appears to have vanished. Moving on to the regulatory rundown, the EU Commission is now investigating if Apple is putting the security of their users at risk through the very close cousin of the Digital Markets Act, the Digital Services Act. Yeah, the two acts came out almost at the same time and cover the internet in subtly different but very confusingly similar ways. And up until now, Apple's been in trouble under the DMA, the Digital Markets Act, because the App Store is in fact a market. The Digital Services Act covers services, but the App Store is also a service. So the App Store is also coming under scrutiny under the DSA. So to quote from what the Commission are cranky about, the Commission suspects that Apple has not put in place reasonable, proportionate and effective mitigation measures tailored to this specific systematic risk, which is that of financial scams through the App Store. The Commission suspects that Apple has not put in place appropriate and proportionate measures to ensure a high level of safety and security of minors on their service. And Apple's head pretty much exploded, and I can understand why. Because the very things Apple are being forced to do grudgingly and crankily to comply with the DMA are removing protections against financial scams and removing safeguards that protect children and everyone else using their service. So the European Commission have forced Apple to roll back, you know, basically to break holes into their walled garden. And now they're cranky that the walled garden has holes in it. It beggars belief. Like, the EU are supposed to be balancing the rights of corporations to be able to compete with each other and the rights of citizens to be able to live in safety and security. And it would appear their mechanism of balancing it is by pretending that they're in some sort of Schrodinger's equation of a universe where they can have their cake and eat it all simultaneously, but just being in a superposition. And Apple have to both weaken and strengthen the App Store at the same time. Apple's response, like I say, cranky. We find it difficult to square the premise of these concerns under the DSA with the Commission's radical enforcement of the Digital Markets Act. Which has continually undercut Apple's ability to protect its users. Through the App Store and App Review, Apple has worked to keep fraud and scams as well as apps that could be harmful to minors like those dedicated to pornography off its platforms. And of course, App Review is the very thing Apple are being forced to remove. So, yeah, wow. There's another story that I wasn't necessarily going to put into the show notes unless it related to something. But the whole point of the changes Apple are being forced to make, which definitely do reduce user security in Europe, like there's no two ways about it, the rebalancing of competition to safety is a rebalancing. Like, having the ability to sideload is less safe. It just is. You can make a good argument that it's better to swap some safety for some more potential competition if you like. I chose Apple because of their safer walled garden. So I am not at all a fan of how the Commission is implementing the Digital Markets Act. But anyway, the whole point of the Digital Markets Act is supposed to be to increase competition and to stop Apple artificially inflating the prices of apps. Therefore, if the DMA was achieving its goals, then there will be a measurable difference in the price of apps in the European Union versus outside the European Union, because in the European Union, Apple have been forced to lower their fees. So Apple financed a study to see if that's true. Apple are taking less money. The apps are remaining at the same price. So what's actually happening is that the DMA is resulting in savings for developers, not for the consumers the DMA claims to be protecting. So whether or not you agree with the goal of the DMA, according to this Apple-funded study, it is failing to achieve even its own goals. I obviously think you take this kind of a study funded by Apple, which happens to find exactly what Apple want to be found, with many grains of salt, but here it is. It's a thing. I also want to give a little shout out to John Gruber, who has an excellent deep dive into Apple's compliance with a different part of the DMA, which mandates how it treats Wi-Fi syncing in the EU between Apple Watches and iPhones. And it's a fascinating sort of look under the hood, which shows you that while Apple doesn't like having to comply with the Digital Markets Act, it is actually doing its darndest to both comply with the law and still give users the best possible service and still keep users as safe as possible. And it's making some very interesting trade-offs. If Apple just wanted to throw the rat out of the pram and make life miserable for Europeans, as some cynics like to pretend, they wouldn't be doing it the way they're doing it now, because it will be much, much easier to just actually throw the actual rattle out of the actual pram. It's a long read, but honestly, I would say make yourself a big cup of tea and look at what John has wrote. I think it's very much worth reading. Moving across to the United Kingdom now, as expected, the UK has refused Apple's request to appeal the $2 billion App Store ruling that was made against them near the end of last month. Now, that sounds bad, but it's not. It's exactly what we expected to happen, because the way the UK law works is that the first thing Apple have to do is appeal to the UK Competition Appeals Tribunal, which is exactly the body that found against them just a few weeks ago. And then that body has to refuse to hear Apple's appeal before Apple can then appeal that failure to be allowed to appeal to a higher court. So to me, this just looks pro forma. Apple did actually put up an extremely robust defense and were quite scathing when they appeared in court. But ultimately, the end game here was to get the court to say no so that Apple could then actually appeal to a higher court. So that's how it panned out. Sadly, when we move to the United States, Apple and OpenAI must face the baseless AI lawsuit about alleged anti-competitive collusion. That is, in fact, the headline from Apple Insider, and I usually steer clear of opinionated headlines because I prefer the headlines to be the facts and then I can be all opinionated by myself. But frankly, this whole lawsuit is so obnoxiously stupid that I couldn't help but join in with the snark in Apple Insider. So I chose their headline because I agree with their snark. To quote from Apple Insider, Elon Musk wasn't happy with how xAI was performing in Apple's App Store compared to ChatGPT, so he filed a lawsuit, which Apple and OpenAI must now face after failing to get it dismissed. Apple and OpenAI were then a few days later granted more time to gather data for their response to the court, and interestingly, one of the filings says that OpenAI have been given permission to request information from an unnamed South Korean entity. We have no idea what that's about, but okay then. Obviously, whenever we get as far as hearing evidence in court, I think this could get a little bit spicy, so we shall watch how this case evolves. Jumping back across the Atlantic to Poland, they are again joining other silly European countries like France in checking whether or not app tracking transparency is hindering competition by stopping advertisers from being immoral and tracking people without their informed consent. I find all of these lawsuits against app tracking transparency to be the most anti-European and stupid thing ever, but European countries do insist on doing it because they're trying to prop up their own smaller advertising companies, despite the fact that their business model is immoral and obnoxious and should just die, because you shouldn't be able to make millions of dollars or euros or any currency by tracking people without their informed consent. And then finally, jumping back across the Atlantic again, why did I write these stories so we keep on hopping from Atlantic side to Atlantic side anyway? Very rare for Apple here, but they have literally been fined for an environmental lapse. This relates to a chip factory in Santa Clara. The headline from Apple Insider is, EPA fines Apple $261,000 to settle hazardous waste complaint. Apple are usually very good about these kind of things. It's very rare to see a judgment like this against them. Well, it's not really a judgment, they settled. But nonetheless, they failed to contain hazardous waste, and they're now literally paying for it. So, I guess good they came clean, bad they did. Jumping into legal latest next, Massimo versus Apple has taken a really unexpected and interesting turn this month. Basically, it's been a great month for Massimo and really quite a bad month for Apple. So first off, the US International Trade Commission, the ITC, has reopened its investigation into the Apple Watch. The question now is whether Apple's software workaround is actually enough of a workaround to get around Massimo's patent. And in a completely different case, Massimo were also awarded $634 million by a jury because the jury thinks that Apple do in fact infringe on a Massimo patent. So yikes. Let's see how that develops. The Apple Watch could yet again lose its heart rate tracking in the United States. We shall see. Was it heart rate tracking? Yeah, whatever feature it was that Massimo claimed to own. Apple has won a patent dispute against a company called Gesture Technologies. They had already won in court, but Gesture Technologies tried to appeal to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court went, no, couldn't be bothered. The case was that Apple allegedly violated Gesture Technologies' patents for Face ID, Smart HDR, and picture facial recognition, as well as optimal optical image stabilization. So basically everything cool about the camera. Apple won in court, and the Supreme Court have now refused to hear an appeal. So dead in the water, case closed, Apple have won. Very briefly popping over to Apple HR and acquisition news, the Chief Operating Officer, Jeff Williams, is now the former Chief Operating Officer, Jeff Williams, having now officially and completely retired. Apple have done something very unusual for Apple. They have laid off a small amount of its sales force. This is kind of interesting. There's a nice analysis from the Mac Observer under the headline Apple layoffs point to major changes in how it sells products. And then the nub of the Mac Observer's insights is Apple has cut several roles in its sales division as it changes how it handles business clients, schools, and government agencies. The company wants a simpler structure so it can sell more directly and reduce internal layers. At the same time, Apple says it continues to hire and encourages effective staff to apply for new roles inside the company. It sounds like an intelligent reorg rather than some sort of a sign of the wheels coming off, but it's unusual. It's very unusual. Jumping to Apple services and original content highlights, let us start with Apple TV. Apple has earned its first ever Grammy nominations for the movie F1, which has 3, and for Severance, which has 1. So getting straight to 4 is not a bad first innings. Meanwhile, Apple also have a children's Emmy nominations, and 7 of them are rather embarrassingly for a show they cancelled, Time Bandits. So I guess the creators of Time Bandits get to go out on an unexpected high as they get 20 or 7 Emmy Award nominations. Oh well. Jumping across to Apple Arcade, press release from Apple's SpongeBob Party Pursuit 2, the follow-up to one of Apple Arcade's biggest hits, launches on December 4th, as well as Power Wash Simulator, Cult of Lamb Arcade Edition, Subway Surfers Plus, Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm Plus, and Glassbreakers Champions of Moss, which also join the service for a blockbuster holiday season, as Apple puts it. Apple Pay then, not that many developments. We have Apple Pay Express mode arriving for Edinburgh trams and buses, which is very useful if you visit that absolutely beautiful city. And Apple brings back its annual Apple Pay donation for World AIDS Day. So if you use Apple Pay until December 7th, then Apple will donate to World AIDS Day. Meanwhile, and this literally means nothing to me, a person called Tyler, the Creator, is Apple Music's Artist of the Year for 2025. If you know who that is, it's probably very well deserved, but there we go, it's a thing. Finally then, some developments in the App Store. Apple has launched a new Mini App Partner Program. Mini apps are basically little apps within ChatGPT, which now get to have Apple handle their payment processing for a fee. Apple have recreated the App Store on the web, although it is purely a view-only mechanism, so you can't download or buy apps, but you can actually get a full web view of anything in any of Apple's app stores, which is kind of useful when you, say, want to link to things. So, you know, I think it's kind of nice, especially given that the actual App Store app is just a bloody wrapper for some HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. May as well have it on the web. So there we are. Apple also has some new rules to keep apps from sending data to third-party AIs without consent. And, much more interestingly in my opinion, Apple have announced the 45 App Store Awards finalists for 2025. And I think those finalists are always well worth having a look at because it's a really fun way to discover new apps and or games you might want to have a go. So link in the show notes. Moving on to our four main stories then, we're going to start with a renegotiation of Apple's first sporty contract with Major League Soccer in the US, MLS. Then we're going to have a look at a really quite substantial month in terms of developments for Apple's digital IDs. Our third story then is the release of the first minor upgrade to the Apple OS 26 series. And we finish with the release of two really quite unusual accessories from Apple. I would call it hardware, but that doesn't quite feel like the right word for it. They are accessories for Apple hardware as opposed to Apple hardware itself. Main story number one then, Major League Soccer in the United States and Apple have renegotiated their deal. The headline change here from a user's point of view is undeniably, undoubtedly, that the need to buy a separate subscription to enjoy the US soccer is gone. MLS games are now included in the standard Apple TV subscription. And I did write Apple TV Plus in the show notes and then had to go and change it to just Apple TV because I still think it's a silly name, but there we are. Interestingly, the deal has also shortened the contract, leaving MLS free to renegotiate digital rights a little bit earlier. So the contract initially was for 10 years, which would have ended in 2033, but now it's ending in 2029. But Apple have had to surrender their option to exit early in 2027. So instead of it being definitely 2027, maybe 2033, it's now definitely 2029, full stop, end of story. There has also been lots of changes to the finances. It's all quite complicated, but sportyco.com did the math, and their take is that when you work it all out, the league is going to net itself an extra $50 million from the whole lot of changes. So lots of swings and roundabouts here. I guess that's what a deal is. So there we are. In related news, Apple's other big sporting early contract was with Friday Night Baseball, and we now have confirmation that, contrary to various rumours that had been doing the rounds, no, it isn't going to someone else. Friday Night Baseball stays with Apple until at least 2028. Second main story then is Apple's digital IDs. Now, at the moment, these really do only exist within the United States, and that makes me very sad because Apple, and indeed Google, have put a lot of work into getting this standardized as an ISO standard, and it's actually a privacy-preserving way of having an ID. It's very, very clever, and I absolutely wish Ireland and Europe would adopt this too. But right now, up until this month, it was just a handful of US states that had adopted it for driver's licenses. And now US passports can be added to Apple Wallet. And in fact, there are readers being rolled out in 250 trial airports, which means that you can actually use your digital version of your US passport in these 250 airports to speed up your passage through TSA, which can only be a good thing. Meanwhile, the first places we saw these digital IDs was in the States, and that's continuing too. So we now have Arkansas and Virginia having released announcements that they're going to do their driver's licenses too. They didn't give dates, but they did say they were working on it and it was coming, so that's interesting. Illinois, on the other hand, are a step ahead and they are ready to go. If you are the owner of a driver's license and an iPhone in Illinois, you can add your driver's license to your iPhone as a digital ID. There's also a nice link in the show notes to a helpful how-to article from Apple Insider. And we should also mention then that there's a lot of clickbait, storm and drang about how somehow Apple digital IDs are Orwellian 1984. It's all nonsense. And if anything, the digital IDs are more privacy-preserving than physical IDs ever could be. It's, well, as Apple Insider put it, public anxiety about Apple's digital IDs is greatly overstates actual risks. Have a read if you're curious. Basically, it's all a pile of nonsense. This is actually way more private than a physical ID. And like I say, I really want it over here, but I can't have it. Our third main story then is the release of the 26.1 variants of all of Apple's various OSs, which at least now have a unified name. So some of them are just security updates, and so I'm not even going to bother talking about them. But for some of the operating systems, there's a little bit more going on. So iOS 26.1 has brought a fairly substantial tweak to Liquid Glass. There is now an option to have a what Apple call a tinted version of Liquid Glass, but which I would call a less transparent version of Liquid Glass. That's now a single toggle you can toggle on. It's not the same as reduced transparency or increased contrast. It's a different, not accessibility-based approach to giving you a choice. So the accessibility features are aimed at making the screen more visible to people with some sort of visual impairment. This tinted mode is just a different look for people who prefer it to look differently. So I guess having three options to tweak it is better than two, especially because those two weren't intended to be aesthetic. They were intended to be practical, whereas this one is intended to be aesthetic. You now can turn off the gesture on the home screen, where if you swipe left or right, I can't remember which, you turn on the camera. I don't do this by mistake, but some people find sometimes that their camera mysteriously activates in their pocket, and that is because they have accidentally made that swipe gesture. So you can now disable the swipe gesture if you don't want it. Now I have and use the hardware camera button, so I really have no need for this gesture. So for me, it makes all the sense in the world to just turn this off. And lots of others are quite happy to now have the option too. A different form of sliding is that you now, if you would like to, have to slide to snooze your alarm. And this is in response to people who are awake enough to tap the snooze button, but not awake enough to realise that they are in fact tapping the snooze button and actually shouldn't and should be getting pretty well out of bed already. So if you're that kind of a person, you now have an option to make the snooze button a slider rather than a button. Very sensible change. And then somewhat related, we also have a little bit of news about what's coming in iOS 26.2, which is that live translation on AirPods is coming to the European Union. So that was a rather short delay. Tinted glass is also coming to macOS 26.1. And the only other really bit of news we have about the Mac that came along with 26.1 is confirmation from Apple that macOS 27 is going to drop support for the Intel chip and Rosetta. So iOS 20 or macOS 26 is the end of the road for Intel Macs. iPadOS 26.1 is not all that different to iPadOS 26, except that Slide Over has returned. That was a multitasking feature a lot of people really liked. That is now available again. If you tap and hold the one of the three radio, or the area where the little traffic light icons are, one of the options you appear is to send the app into Slide Over mode, which I've actually used a few times. It's quite nice. It works well. VisionOS 26.1 adds support for Sony VR controllers, and Apple have started selling said Sony VR controllers on their online store. And then in related news, we have some other small software updates from Apple. GarageBand has got a minor bug fix update, which includes a new icon. The Apple Invites app now lets attendees say how many kids will be attending the party. And Apple Sports is bringing match results to 20 more European countries. That's a long list, too long for me to read, and I'm sorry to say does not include Ireland. Our fourth main story then is Apple release an unusual pair of new accessories. So the first of this pair is something called an iPhone Pocket, which is a limited edition range of two different sizes and many, many, many different colours of knitted iPhone sleeve. And it is designed by the famous Japanese designer Issey Miyake, and it's a fashion item. So the price tag is not really a reflection of how much it costs to knit something out of wool of this size and shape. It is a reflection of the fact that this is a fashion item. So the short sort of hang it on your arm version of this iPhone Pocket sells for $150 and the bigger over the shoulder variant for $230. If you're into fashion, you may be interested in this. If you're not, you aren't. You're just not. It's just not for you. If you are into fashion, there's a nice hands-on review from Apple Insider. It actually seems like quite a nice product if this is your kind of thing. We don't know how many Apple actually made, but we do know they sold out pretty quickly. I also get the impression they must be popular because it's literally just taken a matter of a few weeks for the imitations to start showing up on Amazon. Complete and utter contrast then, Apple have launched an accessibility-focused iPhone accessory. It's basically a grip for people with problems gripping things. So this is the most practical thing. It sells for $69.95. It's not a fashion item. It's a really, really practical thing for people who need some help holding onto their iPhones. And I'm sure that many people who are not technically speaking differently abled will find this useful. So it's just a cool accessory and so utterly different, being utterly practical compared to the iPhone Pocket, which is purely fashion. as you may or may not be able to hear, my voice is really suffering. I had no idea the winter weather had really, really upset my voice until I started recording this show, and then I became really thankful that it's actually been a very short month's worth of Apple news. I have just enough voice left to do one quick story, because everything else kind of would have fit down here anyway, because it's not really all that big of a news anyway. Something Apple do every year to make it easier to buy gifts is that the returns policy on the store is extended into January, so you can buy things for someone, give them the receipt, and so that way they can return it up to January instead of for X amount of weeks. So to directly quote Apple Insider, the new returns policy started on November 12, 2025. Most items bought between then and December 25th, 2025 can be returned up until January 8th, 2026. My show notes say 2025, and I think I copied and pasted from Apple Insider for that last date, so I think they may have had a typo at some stage. Anyway, it's obviously January 28th, 2026 when you can return it to, unless you have a time machine, in which case I'd like one, please. Thank you very much. With that, I will end this show. Thank you very much for listening. A preemptive thank you for spreading the word on social media. If you are one of the people who support this show, thank you oh so very, very much. Whether you have made a one-off PayPal donation ever or whether you are a monthly Patreon subscriber, I thank you greatly. Whether you support the show simply by spreading the word, I also thank you greatly. You will find detailed show notes and big blue buttons to support the show at let's-talk.ie. I have been your host for this month, Bart Bouchotz. You will find me at bartb.ie. And until next time, happy computing.